Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cats.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
Isaac Constance here, filling in for Al Martin on this edition of WKAR's Current Sports. Wishing everybody a happy Father's Day weekend. That's where Al is right now, down in the MIA, Miami, enjoying the time with his stepdad and his mama. And we definitely hope Al has enjoyed his time in the sun. Not that we're lacking for any in Michigan. And what a great weekend it was. I hope you all had a good time. I actually went down to Detroit this weekend, just was hanging out with a couple friends, and got the chance to see all the hoopla surrounding the Detroit Tigers and how they failed to live up to it. Don't worry, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that plus the U.S. Open. Really one of the most intriguing ones, a record-setting or at least a record-tying day from Brooks Koepka, taking home his first ever major victory and championship, tying Rory McIlroy for the lowest below-par score ever recorded in U.S. Open history. We'll also talk about a few of the flubs that day. Not just from players, either. That was a fun one. Plus, the Detroit Red Wings have a very interesting decision to make. It appears that they've made it, and it appears that it's going to be controversial because the Red Wings have officially listed one of their star players as game when it comes to Las Vegas, the franchise, selecting new players in the upcoming expansion draft Wednesday night. A big name is on the block for Detroit. You're not going to want to miss who that is and who they decide to retain and protect on their team while leaving that very player exposed. Plus, we're going to talk about the NBA big moves in the offing and a very special guest for the day. I mean, when we talk about sports, we always touch on basketball, football, golf, baseball, soccer, all the staples. We haven't talked too much about esports, however. Well, our guest for the day is an expert at just that. Noah Walzer, esports writer for RotoWire and ESPN, will be joining us around the half hour. Mark Noah is going to tell us what's going on in that field and just what esports are in the first place. Finally, weekend winners, of course, closing out the hour. It's a tradition, and you know what? It's going to be a fun one today because it was a busy weekend. If you've got any questions, any thoughts about today's show, call in 517-355-9527. That's 517-355-WKR, and we'll be sure to get to your comments. First, though, you know how we start each and every current sports show. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. Larson steered the number 42 Cars 3 and Target Chevrolet to the number one spot at Michigan International Speedway in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Firekeepers Casino 400 on Sunday. Larson started from the pole, led 96 of the 200 laps, and gunned it in a five-lap finale for Father's Day treat of a race. He also won the August 2016 race at MIS and now has three Cup Series wins in 127 career races, with the win He regained the lead in the season point standings over Martin Truex Jr., who finished sixth at Michigan International Speedway in the number 78 Auto Owners Insurance Toyota. Truex claimed each of the first two stages in the race. CBS Sports college football writer Tom Fornelli, in his weekly Friday 5 column, claimed that the Spartans have the nation's toughest schedule in all of college football. That's right. The non-conference schedule includes Notre Dame and PJ Fleck-less Western Michigan University. And in the in-conference schedule, of course, there's Ohio State and Michigan to contend with as well. The Spartans also face tough teams in the division's crossover games. Primarily, Fornelli's judgment, he said, was based off the fact that the Big Ten plays 9 conference games in a competitive division. The rest of the Power 5 plays just 8. Fornelli said, quote, "The reasoning for this is simple. While the SEC and ACC may be stronger conferences overall, every team in the Big Ten plays 9 conference games, while the ACC and SEC play only 8. Furthermore, no Big Ten team plays a team from the FCS this year. Meanwhile, every team in the SEC does, and most teams in the ACC do. That matters when compiling the numbers. In Fornelli's ranking, Purdue comes in second, and Illinois are fourth. Michigan State football also received a commitment for the 2018 recruiting class Saturday night when Belleville High School defensive back Davion Williams announced on Twitter that he would attend MSU. Williams is listed as a 3-star cornerback by 247 Sports and is pegged 76th nationally at the position. The site lists him as the number 21 overall player in Michigan. According to 247 Sports, Williams had 17 scholarship offers, including Big Ten schools Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Purdue, and Wisconsin, UCLA, Syracuse, Iowa State, Temple, and a number of other Mid-American Conference schools all offered him out of conference. Last season at Belleville, Williams was credited with 35 tackles and 3 passes defended. Michigan State's 2018 class grew to 8 with Williams on the team. And success struck home this past weekend for Mid-Michigan prep sports at Williamston High School. Lansing Christian girls soccer owned possession and kept play on the Kalamazoo Christian half for most of the girls soccer game, allowing just 4 shots to reach the goal. The teams completed regulation in a scoreless tie, but it didn't take long for Lansing Christian to hit the bullseye in overtime. Sophomore Rylan Ross flicked a ball in with her head 2 minutes into the extra session. Jackie Moore picked up the assist on that play. Lansing Christian, though, they couldn't finish it off in the extra sessions. Kay Christians, Abby Van Dongen answered with a header of her own off of a corner kick from Megan LaCosson. The final 120 seconds ticked off the clock, sending the game into a nerve-wracking penalty kick shootout. Both teams managed to score on their first attempt, but LC goalkeeper Lynn Cullen swatted away Kayla Beeb on her team's second try, and Elise Van Sperentak hit the crossbar on the Comets' third shot, allowing Lansing Christian to take home the school's first ever Division IV crown, 4-2 in penalty kicks. Congrats to Lansing Christian. Forest Hills Central also won in D1, and Portland St. Patrick found success on the baseball diamond, capturing a Division IV championship. Congrats to all of those teams. Really unbelievable accomplishments. Remember the 2 scoreless starts from Buck Farmer in late May and early June? Now they're a distant memory. Farmer was clobbered for the 2nd straight game Sunday when the Tigers' 9-1 loss to the Tampa Bay Rays struck home, dropping the last 2 games to split the 4-game series. Detroit right now in a bit of a rut. The Tigers started off the series well with 13-4 victories, but the spoils soured from there. Manager Brad Ausman went so far as to call the weekend, quote, crappy. The Tigers now sit at 32-36, fourth in the AL Central. After the game, the Tigers dropped Farmer down to Triple-A Toledo to join Matt Boyd. They will call up starter Annabelle Sanchez for Monday's first pitch at Seattle. That's at 10 p.m. tonight. Hold on to your hats. Catcher Victor Martinez will not make the trip, however. He exited the weekend series with an irregular heartbeat, dizziness, and cold sweats on Saturday. He is out of the hospital, but he remains on the 10-day DL. Promising 25-year-old goalkeeper Peter Mrazek could be parting ways with the Red Wings after the club left him exposed for the expansion draft. The Red Wings chose instead Jimmy Howard, protecting the goalie who is 8 years older. Las Vegas won't necessarily claim Mrazek when its selections are revealed Wednesday at 8 p.m. on NBCSN. Other attractive options include Marc-Andre Fleury of Pittsburgh and Antti Raanta of the New York Rangers. But the Golden Knights could take Mrazek and even attempt to trade him, which the Red Wings were unable to do. The draft will allow newly formed Vegas to select one player of each of the 30 teams. Each team will only lose a max of one player. Red Wings general manager Ken Holland declined to comment Sunday on his protection list. Howard, who is 33 and has 2 years remaining on his contract at $5.3 million, surely would not have been taken by Vegas, not at that age and not for that contract. But the Golden Knights might like Mrazek a little bit better, either to keep or to trade after other teams will be left trying to fill the goaltender void. Mrazek struggled this past season, however, going 18-21-9 with a 3 goals against average and a .900 save percentage. Howard, meanwhile, excelled, posting a 2.1 goals against average and a 93% save percentage, ranking among the top five in the NHL in each category. Howard's 10-11-1 record reflected a lack of offensive support. In addition to Howard, Detroit protected forwards Justin Abdelkader, Andreas Athanasiou, Anthony Mantha, Gustav Nyquist, Thomas Tatar, Henrik Zetterberg, and Franz Nielsen. They also protected defensemen Danny DeKeyser, Mike Green, and Nick Jensen. This leaves exposed forwards like Riley Sheehan, Hunter Helm, Luke Glendening, and prospect Tomas Nosek, Dylan Larkin, Tyler Bertuzzi, and Evgeny Shevchenko are exempt because they have 2 years or less of pro experience in the NHL or AHL. On defense, prospects Xavier Ouellette and Ryan Sproul were left exposed, so were veterans Nicholas Cronwell and Jonathan Erickson, but they won't be taken likely due to their age and also hefty contracts. Teams can bargain with Vegas to ensure that the Knights won't select a certain player. Brooks Koepka brought down what was an up-in-the-air finish with 3 straight birdies on the back nine Sunday at Erin Hills. He closed with a 5-under 67 to win the U.S. Open for his first major championship, and his par on the final hole tied Rory McIlroy's record score of 16-under for a 4-shot victory, tied for the lead with 6 holes to play. Brian Harman began to fade, and Koepka poured it on with birdies over the next 3 holes, lightly pumping his fist after each stroke. Harman's chances ended with 2 straight bogeys, and a bogey on the par 5 18th gave him a 72 on the day, and a tie with Hideki Matsuyama of Japan, who closed with a 66. Matsuyama didn't stick around very long. Koepka just couldn't miss. Koepka, who finished at 256 throughout the entire event, became the 7th straight first-time winner of a major championship. And get this, it was the first time since 1998 to 2000 that Americans won their national championship 3 straight years. Xander Schauffele birdied his last hole for a 69 to tie him for 5th at 10 under 268 along with Bill Haas and Ricky Fowler. Fowler was poised for yet another major to win, only to fall back after a blazing 65 on the first day. Fowler started out 1 shot out of the lead at the Masters this year and shot 76 on the final day. He was only 2 behind when he made it to the final 9th, but bogeys on the 12th and 15th holes without a birdie until number 18 ended his hopes. Last but not least, certainly not least this time, history was made in the WNBA last night when 35-year-old Diana Taurasi became the league's all-time leading scorer. with her parents and even Kobe Bryant in attendance. The Phoenix Mercury guard sunk 14 points in the first half against the Los Angeles Sparks to climb over Tina Thompson on the career scoring charts. She finished with 19 points in a 90-59 defeat in LA. She came up to me during the tournament and said, "I'm the white Mamba," said Kobe Bryant, a.k.a. the black Mamba. Taurasi said she was the white Mamba, too. "Yes, you are, and you've got every bit of the temperament," Kobe finished off by saying. Taurasi took less than 13 full seasons to score her record 7,494 points. Thompson's 7,488 points came over the course of 17 full seasons. Taurasi still averages 18.1 points per game this year. She earlier passed Tamika Catchings for second on the WNBA scoring list early in this same year, 2 weeks ago. She shattered the WNBA record for most career three-pointers made, erasing the previous mark of 906. Now, her tally is 927 after Sunday's game. And with all of that, there's more to come. She recently signed an extension through 2020. And with all of that, there's more to come on current sports as well. That wraps it up with your quick hit headliners. If you've got any thoughts on any of those topics and so much more, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's start the show.
Up ahead, here's Ricky for birdie. Good contact. Oh, beautiful touch for Koepka. Now Harmon's putt for birdie, the other side of the hole. Good look at him. And what a great putt for Harmon. Opportunity here for Ricky Fowler at 7 for birdie. One of a few guys with enough speed to get it up that hill. Now back to Brooks Koepka, co-leader at 8. This a little bit earlier, the number 4 ranked player in the world, Hideki Matsuyama.
Julie said he hit a massive tee shot.
In. Be gigantic, and that never looked like it was going to miss. Brooks Koepka birdie on 15.
Can he make another one?
Get the hole!
You better believe it!
Wow!
Curtis. He's got this putt for the all-time record, lowest score ever posted in the U.S. Open.
That part won't happen, but a major championship will. This for the U.S. Open. Champion.
So it is my pleasure to present to you the coveted U.S. Open Championship trophy to our 117th U.S. Open champion. Congratulations.
Thanks. Leading the field in greens in regulation.
His girlfriend, Becky Edwards, All-American soccer player, Koepka.
Joe, that's actually his new girlfriend. That's Jenna Sims. They were all staying together this week.
Joe Buck, we still love you. Don't worry about it, Joe. Of course, Brooks Koepka taking home the U.S. Open trophy, his first ever major that he won. And somehow, that's not the headline today. Joe Buck making a pretty big flub on the national announcer scene for the first time that Fox has actually broadcasted golf. The 27-year-old from Florida State went up, received his trophy, got a kiss from his girlfriend, a classic U.S. Open tradition. Happens each and every year. And the Fox Sports announcers, they were prepared. They were ready to call out his family members, who they were, who his girlfriend was. And his girlfriend, of course, was Becky Edwards, an All-American soccer player at Florida State. But only one problem there. They broke up. And Jenna Sims is now Brooks Koepka's new girlfriend. So massive congratulations to both Brooks and Jenna. Sorry, Becky, I guess you missed out on a major winner. But at the same time, it was a great event at the U.S. Open. I thought it was really an outstanding finish to it. You saw Brooks Koepka down the line, 14, 15, 16, all birdies. Seal that one up, send the trophy home, and he really had an incredible path to get to this point, too. He hadn't even gone to a PGA Tour, hadn't competed for so long in his career. So he went out, he went to the European Tour, went to Kazakhstan, Kenya, Portugal, India. Brooks Koepka did that all throughout his early career, and even during his time at Florida State, he was not recognized as one of the up-and-coming, brightest golfers in the country, so he had to take his talents elsewhere. He was not invited to participate in the PGA Tour. But it was at the U.S. Open 3 years ago when the 27-year-old Floridian tied for fourth, and that helped him earn his first PGA Tour card. He powered his way from obscurity all the way to his first Ryder Cup team last fall, and now he is the winner of the U.S. Open. Congratulations once again are in order for Brooks Koepka. Really outstanding. Rory McIlroy finished at 16 under, 268 when he won in 2011, and Brooks Koepka tied that score 16 under, the lowest ever. And tied for McIlroy once again. Lowest ever U.S. Open score ever recorded. The low scoring went much deeper than just those two. In fact, though, only six players have ever reached double digits below par in the previous 116 years at the U.S. Open. McIlroy, of course, and Tiger Woods, who finished 12 under in 2000, are the only active players to do so. Now, the event, it started off with Ricky Fowler just blazing his way, blazing the trail, and it looked like he was going to be unstoppable. He started off with a 65 in the first round, followed it up with a 73 in the second, which, of course, not great, but he still looked like he was in control. He was the only big name to really pop up on that list at the start, but then he slipped. Two shots back entering the final day. But he didn't get on enough greens, played it too safe. There were several occasions where instead of trying to finish it off, Ricky Fowler just played it safe. He took a low iron and he tried to hit it into cautious, safe range as opposed to going for the green and trying to put it in on the second or third attempt. Because let's face it, on the day, Brooks Koepka, you know, you heard the highlights of all those great putts he had. Brooks Koepka was 50th in this tournament, 50th in putting. It wasn't his putting, folks. It was all about getting on the green and managing to make it look easy. That's what Koepka did, and Fowler, he just folded. He did the opposite. He played it too safe. He was scared. Fowler still without a major in his career, and honestly, I think this was his best chance yet. Going at against a bunch of other people. In fact, the entire top five had not won a major. Fowler was right there in it with them. But you know what? He fell short. He fell short just like he did back in the U.S. Open in 2014 and just like he did in the Open Championship and the PGA Championship. Aaron Hills was setting up nicely for him, too. You know, Fowler's got a big arm. He's got a big stroke. He can hit it a ways. He managed to navigate the course fairly well, all things considered. The wind was blowing in his favor. There was no reason why he shouldn't have gone for the green every single time. It was a driver-friendly course, but unfortunately, this brought back memories of his time at the Masters this year. When he started the day in third, pole position to take over the competition, but then, once again, faded down the stretch, went from third to 11th on the final day with a 76. Brooks Koepka, meanwhile, though, there was no fade in his game. He dueled it out with Brian Harman. Harman and Koepka actually threw 11 and 12, respectively, were tied up. But as good as Harman was on that front nine, he had a couple bogeys, two bogeys in a row, on the 11th and on the 12th hole, and it was over from there. Koepka just was so steady, so poised. He had to make some big putts, because that's the thing. Like I said, he wasn't that outstanding of a putter for most of the competition, but he was a clutch putter, and that's when it matters, to stymie the momentum of all the oncoming opposition. 14th hole. Koepka hits out of the sand. This is one of the best shots, in my opinion, the best shot that you'd have seen at that tournament that really mattered. Spins back towards the hole, probably 7 feet away, birdies it. And then guess what? 15, birdies again. 16th, birdies again. Again, 50th in putting. He just hit it that well, though. He got in such a good position. At the same time, though, I couldn't help but watch and think, not that it was a boring event. I'm not yawning because of that. But Koepka, that's a name that I had heard of before this event. That's it. The name itself. I could not have told you Koepka's first name. It's Brooks, by the way. I could not have told you it before this event. I had just heard of the guy. Ricky Fowler, I had heard of him. But he doesn't even have a major yet. Then you've got all of these other guys contending without a major. And the question I have for today, calling 517-355-9527, is if there's too much parity in golf. This is the seventh consecutive time that a major has been won by a first-timer. Sergio Garcia finally getting his. Of course, he deserved it. That's no big deal. But Jimmy Walker? Henrik Stenson, congrats. Dustin Johnson, Danny Willett, Jason Day. Big names. I mean, with the exception of Jimmy Walker, all are ranked within the top 22. But at the same time, one major win. First time major winners. All of them. Come on. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not a guy who gets up and likes to ride the coattails of superstars. I'm not somebody who says, yeah, KD, go to Golden State. Hail KD. Just go and try to make it easy on yourself. We just want a one-sided competition so we see the best of the best. We see dominance, all of that stuff. I like competitiveness. I do. But the only time that I've really gotten into golf is the only time that many of you have really gotten into golf. And that's when Tiger's playing. That's when Tiger's cursing. That's when he's throwing, breaking clubs. That's when he's celebrating by jumping up and down, not with a nice little silent, subdued fist pump. That's when golf is entertaining. But Tiger's reign, you know, it was short, it was compelling, it was exciting, but it's over. The majors, when he played, they weren't foregone conclusions. Because, of course, I'm not saying, once again, go play with the Warriors. I'm not saying that you should go and join the Pittsburgh Penguins if you're an all-star hockey stud coming up, like at Austin Matthews or something like that. I'm not suggesting that whatsoever. I like balanced competition. But in golf, when it's a one-man game, you need to know the names. You need to know something about the guys. Otherwise, it loses that whole human intrigue element. When Tiger played, he had a 30% career winning percentage. 30%. That is so good. But at the same time, that leaves 70%. It's not as if each and every time we were just turning it on like, oh, Lord, how much did Tiger win by this time? Not whatsoever. These were enthralling competitions, duels between Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson to determine who the best on the planet was. But you always had those names you could watch, the guys you could connect with. You had video games branded with Tiger Woods' name. Who are you going to brand a video game after now? Brooks Koepka? No offense. Hopefully in the future. Hopefully he becomes that guy. But the only person right now charismatic enough to carry that load is Ricky Fowler. That's at least my opinion. With the neon-colored clothes, the Puma sponsorship deals, Ricky Fowler's got all the swag to be that next guy for golf. And he gave it away. Tiger's done, too. Like I said, the only time I've really, really been a fan of golf was when Tiger was at his peak. But Tiger's not coming back. I don't think Tiger should come back. If he came back, he's not winning anything. He's going to be even worse than he was before this whole DUI situation. But as much as we've had a swath of guys pick up the load, carry his weight in the wake of Tiger Woods' semi-retirement, none of them have been able to replace the great Tiger Woods. Rory McIlroy, he looked like he'd be it in a little bit, and he was, honestly. But obviously, he's not the top dog anymore. Not after he gets cut after the first round. It's not just like he got cut either. Of course, we saw Day. We saw Johnson also cut. So, really, the top names, they're not even making the cut here. Jordan Spieth, he's got plenty of times to make amends for, in some ways, what was a subpar 2016. Of course, 2015, he was just outstanding. He had his streak of dominance. He won two majors. But in his last two Masters, he shot a 73 and a 75. That's not a Tiger Woods performance. So is there too much parity in golf right now? Do you have a guy who you root for every time? I mean, I was happy, like I said, when Sergio Rodriguez won. Well-deserved, long overdue guy who had been in the game forever and had finally earned his worth, finally captured the big one, gone over the hump, all of that. But at the same time, once again, he's no Tiger Woods. He's not the face of the game. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. I want to know, do you think that golf is too balanced right now? Do they still need a superstar? Do they need a face of the game? Or is it fun right now? Because honestly, for me, in the NBA, it's too lopsided. And I've said it before, I think Dr. James Naismith is the greatest inventor of all time. Step aside Thomas Edison. Step aside Steve Jobs. It's Dr. James Naismith who invented the basketball. But at the same time, basketball right now is not in its best state, not when it's so lopsided. I mean, golf, though? Is it in its best state? Ooh, I'd beg to differ. Football and baseball right now, I'd say, are the only two American staples that really keep it balanced, that keep it level. In football, of course, you've got a salary cap, but every single team can compete. Look at the NFC South, the Carolina Panthers. Make the Super Bowl just last year. Then what do they do this year? They're a huge disappointment. They're awful. And I think they'll be pretty good next year. But in their stead comes up the Atlanta Falcons. Matty Ice, Matt Ryan, and all of those classic names that now will be forever remembered as the first Atlanta Falcons team to do something since, shoot, when was it? The 80s, 90s? I mean, this team had such a revival, such a resurgence. That's football. It's unpredictable. It's something that really you get that chemistry, you get a good coach, and you ride the wave. Baseball. Look at baseball. You've got teams like Kansas City Royals, who started off the season at 10-20. They're surging. They're just 2.5 games out of the wild card. Baseball teams that actually have won championships now. Now they feed. I mean, you know, that's how it goes in the sport currently. And teams like the New York Yankees, with all that money, with all that success, they're still not leading their division. As much as you've heard the name of Aaron Judge thrown out time and time again this season, the New York Yankees, you know, it's still very much an up-in-the-air year for them. We'll see what they can do. Whereas a team like the Chicago Cubs, with the proper building techniques, they didn't do this off of big money free agents. Jason Hayward, that wasn't the reason. Come on. It was all homegrown. That's what it is right now. There's that parity in baseball and football right now that make them so fun to watch. But there's a balance. You've got to find that equilibrium point where it's competitive, but you've got the big names still. Because golf right now and this U.S. Open, as much as we might smile for Brooks Koepka and his girlfriend, Jenna Sims, not Becky Edwards, Jenna Sims, at the same time, it's not as fun as seeing Tiger Woods win. Again, call in 517-355-9527. We're going to hit our first break. Coming out of that, though, we've got a very special guest that I'm excited to welcome on, Noah Walzer. He's an esports writer for RotoWire and ESPN. We'll be chatting with him about esports. I mean, we'll really go into it, what they are, especially the most popular one, League of Legends, plus what the future might hold for these sports. Stay tuned. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin today. He's still on a Father's Day vacation. He'll be back in this seat tomorrow. We just got done chatting about the U.S. Open. If there's too much parity in golf right now, because I'll tell you, each and every time you turn it on, it's somebody new. Now, seven straight first-time winners of majors in the sport. And the thing is, as cool as it is, seeing all these fresh faces come up and accept the trophies, not necessarily the same as seeing a face of the game, a recognizable figure claiming the throne, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, though, call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Right now, though, we've got Noah Walzer on, esports writer for RotoWire and ESPN. And full disclosure, Noah and I actually went to high school together. Noah, it's been a while. How's it going, man?
Oh, it's going great. Thank you very much for having me on today.
Oh, absolutely. Now, Noah, this is a foreign topic to plenty of our listeners, I'm sure. I just want to start it off. What are esports?
That's a very good question. Esports refers to competitive video gaming, and not necessarily what for example, parents' kids say they're doing at like 9 o'clock at night when they're supposed to be doing homework. But these are professional athletes. They're given P1 visas from the United States government to come compete in America and play these video games for a living. And they have housing paid for them. They have nutritionists and workout experts make a routine for them so their bodies can be as fit as their minds. They have sports psychologists. They have all these things that normal teams in other more traditional sports do have, but instead of sinking hours into the court, they sink hours and hours into the game, into video games.
What are some of these workouts that they do? What goes into preparation and goes into getting ready for game day?
Well, when it comes to getting ready for game day, I know a lot of teams do team exercises. They'll go jogging, they'll play basketball, they'll do yoga. But it's somewhat limited in terms of physical because the game is mostly mental. When it comes to professional video gaming, it's not just about how quick your reflexes are, like how, you know, twitch-based shooting games. They are popular esports such as Counter-Strike. But the majority of the game is all mental, what you expect the other team to do and how you're going to react to it. It's a lot of talking and discussing as a team about your strengths and then trying to plan out what you're going to be doing against different looks that your enemy gives you. It's kind of like football in a sense, where the offense might give you a bunch of different looks and you might watch film from a week ago and then they come into the game and they're showing you completely different reads. So you have to be able to adapt on the fly.
Now, I know that one of the biggest esports, I think the one that our listeners might be most familiar with, actually our very own Scott Pola here at WKR did a feature on it, actually pretty recently. But it's League of Legends. What's League of Legends? How do you play? And what are the rules for getting in there? And is it a competitive game? Is it going head to head against other teams?
Oh yeah, for sure. League of Legends works like this. It's a 5-on-5 game. 5 players on each side, 2 teams, and the object of the game is to destroy your enemy's base, or Nexus, right? Mm-hmm. To do that, each team takes turn drafting champions that they can play. Each of the champions has unique abilities, strengths, and weaknesses. They can be played in 5 different roles, and there's a roster of over 125 at this point. I don't know the exact number off the top of my head. 2 were just released recently, and they're pretty good. And there are more champions being added and champions being reworked that were older, you know, given new abilities, new looks, fresh makeovers every couple of months or so. The way the game is competitive is not only that you have to be able to draft a better team composition than your other team and pick better champions that will be able to better articulate or complement the way you want to play the game, but you then also have to get in the game and actually play it, right?
Yep.
It's a little like playing pickup basketball if you knew all the pieces and if you knew all the players and there are 125 of them.
Huh.
If that makes sense.
No, absolutely. So what's the atmosphere at most of these events?
Oh, the events get insanely hyped. Most recently, I think the biggest international League of Legends event was MSI, the Midseason Invitational, which is an international tournament pitting the number one team from each region in the spring split against each other. And the crowd at Brazil was insane. Raucous energy. The crowds were hyped for everything, even when the Brazilian team, the hometown team, got eliminated. These events are very much, not only like are they highly populated live, but there's also a lot of online traffic. I've actually got some numbers I'm going to spit at you if you don't mind real quick.
Absolutely.
Because I kind of want some of the listeners here to understand what the kind of scope that we're dealing with here. Esports might seem like a very niche product, and it has been for a while, but it's starting to get mainstream levels of popularity. Last year, in the 2016 League of Legends World Championships, there are over 370 million total hours of live esports content viewed across all the viewers. Right, which blows my mind. And then, if you can choose to believe this, about 396 million total cumulative daily unique impressions. And what that means is that 396 million unique viewers tuned in to the League of Legends World Championships at some point over its 15-day run.
So we're essentially saying that 396 computers logged on to check out something esports related.
Oh yeah, for sure. And this isn't just like people watching in their basements or on their phones by themselves. I went to a bar to watch the finals. I watched it with I think there were 50 other people with me in there, but it was like a traditional sports event. It was like watching the Super Bowl. It was an amazingly hyped atmosphere. The fan base is rabid for this kind of gameplay because not only is League of Legends a fun game in terms of watching competitive, two competitors come at each other, but it's free to play. It's absolutely free to go download the game right now. Now, that being said, it takes a lot of time to get into,
mm-hmm.
right? And just like basketball, just like other traditional sports, you are only as good as how much effort you put into improving, right? And so that's why esports has really become popular with the League of Legends crowd because you can watch somebody play and you can look at what they do and say, I can do that. And then you get that desire to go practice in the training mode, right? And then you go play online, you win some games, and then you get that feeling, you get hooked on that competitive feeling of like, oh boy, I'm winning a lot. I got to keep going. I want to be the best. And so that's what really appeals to people.
Definitely. We're chatting with Noah Walter, esports writer for RotoWire and ESPN. Noah, I want to continue along this line of esports as compared to traditional sports, ones you think of, like you said, basketball, football, baseball. I know a lot of people are out there thinking, my son suffered a concussion last year, you know, and my son sweats on hours on end and all of that at basketball practice. I don't think I'm pulling anything, you know, out of the hat when I say, a lot of people probably wonder about how these things stack up to regular traditional athletics. Why are esports sports?
Well, okay. So this is the $1 million, the buzzword question, the one that gets everybody all upset online, right? And I'm going to be honest here. I think there is a major difference between esports and regular sports in that esports requires ridiculous amounts of dedication to a game that is very changeable and very tenuous, right? But let me indulge you in a hypothetical real quick. What if Adam Silver came out and said, hey, by the way, next year dunks are worth 1 point. We're introducing a 4-point line that's going to be 35 feet out. And everybody from, let's say, Serbia, you can only have two Serbians per team or something ridiculous, right? Like these rules that change the makeup of the game and change essentially the meta of the game, how the game is played. This happens once every 2 weeks, not 2 weeks, once every like maybe 3 to 4 weeks. Wow. In professional League of Legends, the rules of the game change. Certain things become stronger, certain things get weaker, and then teams have to be able to adapt on the fly. So you can't just do the same thing over and over again for a year straight, right?
Yeah. So then even the training regimen changes for these guys, I'd assume, huh?
Oh, my God, yeah. So for most teams on a professional level, at least in North America, which is where I have the most amount of exposure in a kind of behind-the-scenes term, most of these teams are practicing 12 hours a day.
Wow.
The players wake up, they eat the breakfast that their dietitian or their chef's prepared for them. They then go to their practice space and they start scrimmages against other teams. They do that for a couple of hours, like maybe 2 to 3 hours. They then take a lunch break. They then look over those scrims and watch videos of their opponents for that week. And then they go back to scrimmaging, and then they watch videos of that, and then they go home, and then they practice on their own. Because playing in a team dynamic and just practicing your individual mechanics are two completely different things. I think one of the best League of Legends players ever, a Korean named Apto, who will never see the competitive scene but has an insanely good mind for the game, said that competitive League of Legends and solo queue, which is where the common rabble plays, I guess, in a kind of demeaning tone. Those are completely different games except for the map you play on and the champions you can pick, right? There's so much communication and there's so much precision that goes on in competitive games that you have to be in sync with all the rest of your teammates. But it's difficult to practice that and be able to learn how to be more proficient at your individual gameplay. So you have to separate those times so the players can get maximum growth in both areas.
Absolutely. We're chatting with Noah Walter right now, esports writer for ESPN and RotoWire. Noah, I want to touch on some of the good traits that make up an esports player. I'd imagine mental acuity and a little bit of fast twitch muscle movement would always help. But what really goes into these guys becoming some of the best in the world and the highest paid in the world?
Well, having good reflexes is obviously going to be one of them. If you have good mechanics, you can usually fight your way out of bad situations. But what makes a truly good player is your mental game, right? I think currently the best player in the world of League of Legends is this guy named Faker. ESPN has done multiple articles about him. He's the Michael Jordan of League of Legends. Nobody will touch him. Nobody can touch him right now. Like when you talk about basketball, you say, who's the best of all time? Is it LeBron? Is it MJ? Is it Kobe? There's multiple names
in
discussion.
It's not Kobe, but yeah, continue.
Okay. All right. But when you talk about League of Legends, the names that come up are Faker and nobody else. How dare you insult Faker like that? Mm-hmm. Faker is the best player in the world, not necessarily because he has the craziest mechanics, but because he's one of the most intelligent players in the game. He knows how to get the most out of every situation. He knows how to maximize advantages for his team without overextending, without risking too much things. And that's why he's been able to win so many world championships, 3 world championships, out of the 7 years that this game has been running competitively.
Wow.
So when you're looking for traits in an esports player, you want decision-making. You're looking for like instincts. How good are they at knowing when they should be going in and or not? How good they are mechanically? And then most importantly, how quickly they're able to adapt. Because as I mentioned earlier, the popular champions change. The power picks that you might have relied on a week ago might not be as powerful the next week. So you have to be able to learn how to play multiple different play styles, different champions with different move sets on the fly. And so when you're looking at great players, it's all about adaptability.
Definitely. No, just a couple more questions for you, actually. First of all, what drew you to esports?
Well, I used to play traditional sports, But I was never too good at them. Not necessarily because I wasn't athletic, although, to be honest, you look at some of the people who are playing today, and it's like, I could never do that. But I always, after a while, the game kind of got stale for me, right? Mm-hmm. But when it came to video games, the game kept changing. And so that's what instantly hooked me. And being a lifelong gamer myself, I thought, well, you know, competitive and then video games, that's a great combination. Let's try this out. And so that's how I started to get into it in high school. And then as I got more into the scene, I realized that the scene was about to explode. The bubble was expanding slowly but surely. So I started trying to get on the ground level and then got a job at RotoWire. And then the rest is history, right?
Yep. All right. And then last question for you, Noah. I read an article recently actually on ESPN about esports being in the 2020 Olympics. How realistic is this of a possibility?
Well, I'd like to imagine it's a realistic possibility because esports is a global game. Video games, the video games that the people are playing, like League of Legends, like Counter-Strike, like Dota 2, are the same across every major region in the world, meaning that you're playing the exact same game as somebody in Korea, as somebody in China, as somebody in Iran, as somebody in London. So if on an Olympic level, there are enough countries that can field a team of five players to represent their home nation, mm-hmm. I'm all for it. I can understand if people might be upset with that. I can understand if people might be against that. But I think the Olympics aren't necessarily about sports. They're about competition. And right now, the future of competition looks bright in esports.
Absolutely. Noah Walter, esports writer for RotoWire and ESPN. Noah, thanks so much for being on. We'll have to have you on again soon.
Thank you, Isaac. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Call in 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. We're going to talk a little bit of Red Wings right after the break. First, though, also a little bit of Detroit Tigers having a rough weekend stretch. Stay tuned. You're listening to me, Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin on WKAR AM 870. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. My name's Isaac Constance, filling in for Al Martin. He's on vacation out in Miami, hanging with his stepdad and his mom. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. I hope you had a great one this past weekend. We just got done talking with Noah Walter, esports writer for ESPN and RotoWire. Noah, obviously thinking that esports should be in the Olympics. And I've got to say, why not? You know, I mean, we've got so many other sports in the Olympics, and like he said, and I absolutely agree, it's about competition. It's not about, right now, physical prowess or something like that. And, of course, these guys definitely have their own skill set in their own way. And there's a difference between esports. Like he said, they've got their own dietitians, own workout routines, all of that. Guys that probably need a new workout routine, however, the Detroit Tigers. 2-2 over the weekend to the Tampa Bay Rays, losing the last two. Buck Farmer getting shelled yesterday. The Tigers fell to 32-36, fourth in the AL Central. Some news I want to pass along. Buck Farmer, as I said, sent down to Triple A Toledo. Watch out, Anibal Sanchez coming back up. So you know that, in my opinion, that's the sign. That's all done. I'm sorry. I mean, not because Anibal Sanchez alone, but this disappointing weekend stretch from Detroit, I think it's time to sell. And I think I have every right to say that as an outsider, as somebody who's not born and raised a Detroit Tigers fan. I know there are all sorts of names that I'm going to bring up and y'all are going to get sentimental about, such as Justin Verlander, Miguel Cabrera, et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is, if a good offer comes in right now for the Tigers, you've got to sell. This ain't working. You're 32-36. You're a game above the Chicago White Sox right now. You're not going to make the playoffs at this pace, and I don't think you're one player away from making the playoffs either. The thing is, right now, You are mediocre at best. You can't even win the games at home. You don't have Mookie Betts. You don't have Xavier Bogaerts. You don't have Jose Ramirez. You don't have Jose Altuve. You've got, in fact, the fourth oldest batting lineup in the entire league. If a good offer comes in, you sell. And JD Martinez and Alex Avila might be the two that get the most traction, but I say put everybody on the block. I think the season's done. Somebody who is on the block and might get picked Wednesday is actually a Detroit Red Wing goaltender by the name of Peter Mrazek. The hero from just a few seasons ago in the playoffs, made his appearance, proved his worth, but really hasn't had the same appeal since 25-year-old Peter Mrazek has been left exposed by the Detroit Red Wings preparing for the upcoming expansion draft in which the Las Vegas Knights will attempt to build together a team. I thought this was a bad move. I'll be real with you, from Ken Holland. I think Peter Mrazek still has a lot of value, trade value. Jimmy Howard, 8 years older than Mrazek. And the thing is, even if they don't want Mrazek as their goaltender, Las Vegas, I think, will pick him, sell him, and get something good in return. There will be all sorts of teams who want a good goaltender after this draft, because guess what? Las Vegas is going to take a few. Marc-Andre Fleury is probably going to be their starter. Doesn't mean they won't go with Mrazek nonetheless. Anyway, just about the end of the show, but you know how we close out each and every Monday. We've got weekend winners.
This is what's great about sports. This is what the greatest thing about sports is. You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game. You don't play to just play it. That's the great thing about sports.
My first weekend winner, I gotta say. Congrats to all the fathers out there. Very happy Father's Day weekend to all of you. You guys are the true winners of all of this. But going on to the sporting world, I gotta say, I don't think there's anybody more deserving than Diana Taurasi, becoming the WNBA's all-time leading scorer. That is a significant accomplishment. Congrats to her. She's really the MJ of women's basketball, and nobody's more deserving as far as I'm concerned. Also, I gotta give credit to the Philadelphia 76ers and our engineer for the day, Brad Walker. Trust the process. You've been listening to WKAR AM 870 and FM 94.5 Current Sports. Al Martin will be back in just tomorrow.